And now I will hand over to Daryl Scott, our standard setter discussant. We are missing you here, Daryl. Please, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you today, and thank you for that introduction. And I will say that I'm missing the ISB as well. I think perhaps, unlike others who are on this call today, I've had relatively little exposure to this forum over the years. So I particularly enjoyed the preparation and listening in on the sessions up to this point today, and the opportunity to be part of the process. I'm not going to talk at all about my agenda. This is just an outline of the discussion today. I'm going to go straight from here into my introduction. And a couple of comments as introductory comments. I think, firstly, I'd like to say thank you to the authors of the paper. I found this a fascinating and maybe even a compelling read. And it certainly presented for me a lot of food for thought. I guess in researching a topic like this, a lot of the devil is in the detail. And I think that certainly comes through in the reading of the document as well. Perhaps one other comment that I'd like to say, having listened to Catherine talk, is that I think that there are a couple of common themes that I'm likely to pick up, perhaps not coming at it from the same perspective, but certainly in the feeling that I got as I was working through the paper. And I think hopefully that provides you with a little bit of useful insight too, from an author perspective. So as you've discussed in your slides, and as Catherine picked up in hers too, the document sets out with the objective of analyzing the effect of the ISB's decision to eliminate proportional consolidation, and does that in the light of the consequential impact that had on the decision on comparability. It also discusses the background work that you've done in looking at the regional differences before the change, insight into the drivers of entity decision making, and discusses the effect and quality of subsequent disclosures that have been made. Personally, I found all of the components, all of these different components of the paper really interesting. And in thinking about this, I sort of, as I went through it, split my takeaways into those that reflect what I see as the primary objective, which is the comparability of the financial statements, with those that I've referred to in this presentation as being incidental. Now, I certainly don't mean incidental in a pejorative sense. I think these takeaways or these additional findings that came through in the paper were really important from the author perspective as you sought to understand your outcome and understand what the drivers were, some of the indicators you had. But I think my phrasing them or putting them into this incidental category is that I found that they actually provided me with a lot of useful insight. And in some circumstances, that insight was as important for me in thinking about where this paper arrived at as were the primary findings. So overall, I think as has been mentioned, the finding was that comparability generally decreased, although that outcome wasn't universal across your sample. And once you drilled into the detail, the differences in outcome were themselves interesting. The incidental findings in my mind, the loss of quality as regards disclosures, the impact on the effect of cultural and regional factors on accounting policy choice, insight into the decision criteria of entities and what might have driven the way or what they were thinking about as they made their decision, were all really useful things, and they both provided insights in their own right, as well as insights into causality. What was the cause and what was the effect that ultimately drove your findings on comparability? So drilling into each of the individual findings and sort of talking a little bit about my takeaways, I think it's important this paper analyzes the outcome of the change in the very specific context of the board's rationale for making that change. And I think that's very powerful for me, is that we as a board in the past sense, the board in the present sense, set out with a very specific objective in this particular context to improve comparability. And therefore, it's very powerful to say that having looked at the underlying numbers, that objective, that primary target that the board was looking to achieve wasn't actually arrived at. I really like the discussion of the difference between uniformity and comparability. It is a relevant reminder for me to the board, And one that I've typically focused on a lot in the discussions that I've done over time. Uniformity and comparability are two things that are very often confused in the way people, sometimes us, talk about setting standards, but more importantly, in the way people analyze our standards. In the context of this paper, and I think this is a little bit of what Catherine may have been touching on too, this uniformity versus comparability did raise some tricky questions for me. The argument around uniformity and consistency or comparability is premised on the concept that like should be accounted for in a like manner and that different things should be accounted for in a different manner. And I don't think anyone really can argue with that premise, although it is a commonly misunderstood one. But in this particular position, that necessarily implies that there is a subset of joint ventures that are different from the rest. And even more importantly, that entities accounting under the previous regime consistently identified that subset and used that subset as part of their decision-making around their policy choice. I think if that is the case, and if that proves as we go through the process of discussing this paper, that proves to be the case, then I think it is an incredibly important consideration for the board as it goes forward making decisions, because it implies that there may be more broader benefits to the way companies think about the particular accounting policies, accounting choices they make, than may otherwise be assumed, I think, both by the market and to a certain extent by standard setters within that market. I'll talk a little bit more about disclosures on the next slide, but I think it's fair to say here that the paper finds that the required disclosures in the notes have not been particularly effective. And I think consequently, taking all that together, the paper finds that there's been this reduction in comparability at an overall level. I talked about primary and I talked about the secondary or the incidental findings of this paper. I think when Catherine talked about disclosure, she talked about it as an extension. In any case, when I think about the disclosure findings, I think these are particularly important findings. And however they came about doesn't change the fact that they're very, very important as part of the output of the paper. So the paper notes that the board recognized that the change in methodology would result in some loss of information. And I think that's an important consideration that the board had, and talks a little bit to the way Catherine talked about the difference between views of proportional consolidation and equity accounting. But as a consequence of that recognition, the board introduced these specific disclosure requirements to compensate for that loss of information and to make sure that users had this information even though an entity was not applying the proportional consolidation method. I think what the paper finds is that the disclosures did not necessarily or did not meet this requirement in many circumstances, did not meet this objective in many circumstances. And I think that there are a couple of reasons that I took away from reading the paper. I think firstly and most obviously is that the disclosure requirements were themselves poorly complied with. But I think some of the analysis also seems to indicate to me that beyond that poor compliance, and perhaps even more interestingly, that even when these requirements were complied with, the loss of comparability persists to an extent. And I think that in turn points to a number of potential drivers or potential reasons. Firstly, that the disclosures were perhaps poorly designed, and that made it hard for investors and users and others to understand or to get the information that they needed. Or that the disclosures, albeit that they've been done properly, have been poorly understood by the market, poorly understood by investors using the information. They haven't understood where perhaps they can find their compensatory information or how they can use that information. I think it also goes to a point that has been raised from time to time, is that there is an assumption now, an inherent assumption that disclosures are poorer quality information than information on the face. And that in the context of this particular study may point to the fact that the information is not as highly regarded and therefore not given the same weight when it's in the disclosures by investors as they might do if it was on the face of the financial statements. And I think all of those reasons why disclosures may not have met the objectives form really important data points for the board to consider as it looks to the studies, it looks to the processes that the board will have going forward. During the PIR process to look at 10, 11, and 12, and for that matter, for other standards. Moving on to some of the other findings, as mentioned earlier, in thinking about the difference between uniformity and comparability, there must be a subset of economically different joint ventures that entities consistently chose under the previous regime to account for differently. This paper devoted a considerable amount of very useful discussion to analyzing the outcome of entity decision making. And for me, it was clear that there are a number of drivers that prepare a discussion making that includes things like, say, choice of auditor, that doesn't immediately feel like appropriate criteria in coming to this economically different subset. It also identifies for me that there are significant differences arising from regional accounts and in the way regional accounts have been done. I like the discussion in the paper about the fact that regional differences might be caused by real underlying economic differences, for example, differences in legal environment or management culture. But in my own sort of gut feeling, and I think this also comes back a little bit to what Catherine may have mentioned, I can't help also wondering how much of this is behavioral practice, perhaps particularly based on what the past practice was in specific jurisdictions, and that behavioral practice drove the decision making. And I think figure one in the paper, which I think was your slide 9, was a revelation for me in just how pronounced regional differences were in this particular space. And then I think something that we may need to be careful of this is to what extent regional past practice also explains investor understanding, investor interpretation of financial statements, investors' ability to move from one accounting approach to a different accounting approach. All right, so thinking about how all of this would affect standard setting considerations going forward, and I have to be a little bit cautious here because as Tadeu picked up in his introduction of me, I am now formally a past standard setter. So whatever I might say in this particular context may have influence on how much work my ex-colleagues have to do. But thinking about this in the standard setter context, I think the paper correctly identifies that this is a topic that will definitely provide useful input into the PIR of IFRS 10, 11, and 12. Tadeu, you're about to tell me 3 minutes.
That's correct.
Okay. And I personally think in the context of providing us with input into 10, 11, and 12 PIRR, it's very timely, very useful. And I think it helps us consider both accounting policy choice, but also in considering the effectiveness of the disclosure regime. So I think all of those are important indicators for the board to think about as they go into the PIR process. But I think beyond that, there are a couple of other really important things. The disclosure initiative is clearly about improving the way disclosures are designed, thinking about how they complied with and thinking about their understandability. And I think coming out of the paper, there's a lot of evidence that can go into thinking about making disclosures more effective and making sure that they work better in practice. And then I think this will also affect other projects that impact on accounting policy choices. Business combinations under common control. Currently, we know that there's relatively unconstrained choice. And the board already has some evidence that entities are applying objective-based considerations in thinking about how they do their consolidations, what basis they use for their consolidations. The evidence here might support the thought process that the direction of the project should build on the reasons preparers have identified for what they do and for why they do it. In the primary financial statements project, the board exposed the idea of exploring the rationale for why entities present associates in different places on their income statement, and then use that rationale to both allow for different treatments, but also to govern when and how those different treatments are actually used. And again, I think this provides us with some interesting insight into that. So I think in summary, I found the paper really useful and thought-provoking. In spite of the considerable effort of the authors, I was left with some questions specifically about this uniformity and consistency or comparability, and in particular about what drove the historical decision-making processes, what drove the original differences that were identified by the authors of the paper. Also wondered how much of the loss of comparability is caused by poor disclosures rather than, and how much of it is caused by past habits rather than by the change that was specifically made to IFRS 11. And I think this just all does provide very useful input into the board's standard setting process. So from my perspective, thank you for the paper. Thank you for the very useful read. And with that today, I'll hand back to you.
Thank you very much, Darryl.